Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We're happy to return to discuss landlord-tenant law, this being the final installment for the spring of 2024. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. You know, with the 20 years of creating jobs, but with minimal increase in housing, a housing shortage was the inevitable result. And housing prices have reached an unsustainable level. Purchase prices are ever higher, forcing more and more folks into the rental market, where they compete with short-term rentals in addition to other prospective renters. Can we build our way out of what is perceived as a severe housing crisis? Or is the lack of affordability the result not only of a lack of housing, but perhaps other forces at play? What landlord-tenant changes went into effect in recent months? I mean, if not changes in the law, what about what's actually happening? What's happening with evictions? What's happening with lawsuits? Seems there's some changes afoot. And what developments, if any, are pending in legislation on the horizon, or have they been set aside with the governor's budget deficit and moves to fix it? You know, there's a lot going on. And as always, we want you, our most important guest, to join us in the conversation. So give us a call. Our phone number here is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Bear in mind that our attorney guests are here to educate, to inform, maybe to entertain, but they can't provide specific legal advice what to do on a specific case they haven't seen. But they're here to help. They're here to give you guidance. They're here to try to help you sort out the legal principles and what options you might have. Tonight's guest, returning tonight, is one of the Bay Area's top landlord-tenant attorneys. From San Francisco, attorney Salvatore Timpano was considered one of the top attorneys in the Bay Area to practice in the area of landlord-tenant law, representing both landlords and tenants, particularly in the area of eviction. But Sal, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be on the air. You know, I always enjoy the program. I enjoy the listeners who call in, and I usually enjoy the other attorney guests who couldn't make it tonight.
No, it's unusual. I heard from both of them in the last few minutes, and both had some rather urgent and very short notice stuff that they're dealing with.
Yeah, it happens. I hope to have a good program with calls that we can deal with, and we can have Jessica and David on the next program.
Oh, they're both coming back. Who's kidding who? But let's chat a little bit. I mean, as I mentioned at the beginning, one of the things I noticed is that with the governor spotting a huge budget deficit, seems that some pending legislation is slowing down pretty quickly. Does that include landlord-tenant? Is there any laws that you're hearing about from day to day that are in the offing, or have things in Sacramento slowed down?
So, you know, we came off the pandemic rules, you know, that were put into place to protect tenancies and to, you know, protect landlords, to get them paid. You know, there was a lot that happened there, and there's been some criticism of it, but, you know, it was all put in place under the, you know, threat of emergency. So it was put into place in order to do what seemed to be the right thing, and whether it did or not for everybody, you know, that's something else. But most people, I think, were helped by those emergency measures during COVID. And I still hear, you know, COVID-related issues coming up now, although most, if not all, of the restrictions are gone. And there's a couple of things that might be holdovers that just seem to make sense, even would have made sense even without the pandemic. And some of those things might be lingering on in one fashion or another. But otherwise, you know, we've got the statewide rent control that came into effect in 2019, about a year before the pandemic. And now we're starting to look at that. We're starting to work with it because we're not restricted, you know, by the pandemic rules. So outside of the president's, you know, idea of, you know, mentioning, you know, rent control throughout the United States, I'm not aware of anything in Sacramento right now that's big. So have you heard of anything, Jeff?
I haven't heard of anything that's pending right now. It seems, though, that a lot of the changes that we're dealing with that are just starting to come into really where we're seeing them in a big way actually started even sooner with the Tenant Protection Act of 2019. I mean, the whole idea of a statewide rent control ordinance would have been unthinkable not that many years ago.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Greg. It would have been unthinkable. I think, you know, what the bill was trying to address was out of control, expensive housing, and we're just sitting ducks for that, because if the interest rate is low, and investors buy property, property prices are going to go up because their investors are going to be looking to buy, and so, you know, the Bay Area is a nice place to live, and if you lower the interest rate and you get a bunch of investors focusing on the Bay Area, then prices are going to go up. And who's going to pay? You know, everybody else. So, you know, the Tenant Protection Act was put into place in California primarily to protect areas like San Francisco from ever-increasing rents, and, you know, Los Angeles, some places in Southern California as well. But most of the state, at least by name, you know, there's a lot of small places in California, little towns, maybe even too small to call towns. They don't need the Tenant Protection Act, but the cities, you know, the main cities in California do. So it's going to affect places where it's needed, and the other places are just not even going to notice it's there. They're just not going to need it. There's no competition. There's no shortage of housing in a lot of these small places in California, which there are a lot. It's just most of us, you know, we know San Francisco, we know LA, we know San Diego, and there's, you know, big areas in California that didn't have rent control that they do now. San Jose had limited rent control, just a limited amount, for example. Well, now they're under the statewide scheme, and so there's places that didn't have any rent control that now do have the statewide scheme, and after a few things get hammered out, I think it's going to work. You know, I think it's going to protect us from a spike in real estate prices, which would then, you know, displace tenants and cause all the problems elsewhere, you know, that would happen after that, because then they're going to move. And whatever job they were doing is going to be empty now. So, it's going to take time for it to work, and there'll be court hearings on it and, you know, changes to it. But I think it was probably needed when it came into place, and not years before. Years before, no. But now it was, and the prices are still high. Real estate's still not catching up to the demand. So something needs to be in place. May not be there forever. You know, it might be pulled out. It was only put in temporary anyway, and I believe it was renewed. But, you know, it may not be there forever. It may not be needed. But for now, we probably need it.
One thing we haven't talked about much are short-term rentals. some of the obvious ones that we've talked about over the years. Short-term vacation rentals that are grabbing up some of the housing stock. So the few people that really take advantage of that make huge profits at the expense of housing costs. Is there any way to limit Airbnb or some of the other ones?
Well, like you may know this, in San Francisco, owners of properties that are listed on Airbnb are only allowed to rent it for a certain amount of time throughout the year. The last time I checked, it was 3 months. I don't think it's been changed. I think it's been like that for a long time. So 3 months out of the year, an owner is allowed to rent out their property. Now, the owners don't like it because it's, you know, their property and they should be able to rent it out as much as they want. And I, you know, I'm not really disagreeing with them. But because of the impact that it's having on rental properties, because a lot of owners are using that platform, and rules came in about limiting their ability to rent it out that way all year, because by doing so, they don't have rent, they don't have tenants in their units, as long as the people don't stay long enough to acquire tenants' rights, and so they have the benefit of the income without the, you know, tenants' rights to contend with. So I certainly get, I see the reason, but that's all that rent control and a lot of government rules do anyway, is to limit things that cause problems elsewhere. You know, that's what they're doing with the Airbnb, you know, rental restrictions, that it can only be rented out for a certain amount of time. And I do recall it being, I do believe it's 3 months. I don't think there's been any change to that. So there certainly are owners that are violating that, and they're renting it out for more than the time. I have not heard of any penalties being issued against those landlords. But, you know, if it becomes more prevalent, then, you know, you'll start to hear about, you know, there'll be something in the media about, you know, a landlord got caught, you know, renting it for too long. Once in a while, you hear about landlords that rent to an Airbnb renter for over a month, and then that renter becomes a tenant. And then it becomes a story about the landlord unable to remove the tenant. So, you know, those things happen. You know, you've heard of those, right, Jeff?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's you know, some of them are sad stories, but, you know, you're reading the paper, you're reading it in the media or hearing it, and you really don't get all the details. So you could pick a side maybe, but you really don't know enough details. I find that a lot of these that I read, I have questions and they're not answered. And so I really don't know. You know, I'm not sure. And the legislature, too, when they come up with new laws, they don't know right away either. So they've got to look into it before they come up with a law to fix what looks like an apparent problem. Because otherwise, it could just be obsolete before they even, you know, put it into, you know, into a bill or pass it into law. So, anyway, I don't see the housing crisis getting better yet, as far as not having enough affordable housing. But there is a lot of building going on in San Francisco, and even in the peninsula. So I think it's working towards that, and then there'll just be, you know, less litigation and maybe less legislation, because the problem might be eased for a long, long time. But even with all the building that's happened and ongoing, we're still not there. So these, you know, apartments are still hard to get and still very expensive.
But then, you know, the reality is they can make all these rules, they can legislate, but how do you enforce not renting to Airbnb? Who's looking and actually keeping track?
Yeah, as far as I know, Jeff, there's nobody keeping track. And I have seen rentals that are just, they're like full-time, you know, full-time rentals. And nobody's really keeping track. You know, even if those things were to come up in litigation over possession of the unit, you know, unlawful detainers are protected from public view for a while. And even when they come out of public view, I'm not aware of anybody scouring, you know, the court records to see what happened. A lot of the cases are going to resolve by settlement anyway, and all that's going to be outside of the court system. So, you know, everything that's pled in a complaint is not proven. It's just pled. The answer will typically say, none of that's true. And then the case resolves. So it's really a private settlement. Not really such a great place to look for facts. It's not easy to gather, you know, evidence when this occurs. It's just not easy. Sure, it's possible, but not easy. You know, just nothing I'm aware of is working right now for the Airbnb issue. And I don't know how many homes, apartments, homes, how many rental units have been, you know, basically removed from rental housing stock because of Airbnb. That I don't know. I know that there's talk that there's something, you know, substantial, but I don't know what it is. I don't know how much it is.
Let me turn it to George in San Francisco. George, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks a lot. We've got a number of friends that have come up against a problem that you encounter when you move, when you're moving from one to another apartment or house. What happens to your goods? Like, maybe you can't find a place that's big enough, so you rent a smaller place temporarily, and then cross your fingers that you got a place where you could put all your belongings. So I haven't known what to say to people with that particular problem, but it seems to be a term in the agreements for collecting your things and putting them in a safe zone. There doesn't seem to be any actual rules for that activity. Do you know what we're talking about?
If I understand you correctly, what you're saying, George, is that sometimes you're forced to leave, whether because you've been evicted or because your lease is up and they're not renewing for whatever reason. And it's as a tenant who's put in that position, it's often hard to find a way to move your things or protect your things while you're looking. Is that what you're thinking about?
You know, that's what it is, and people can cross their fingers, but you could wind up losing a bunch of things because of the way the rules are applied. So we were hoping that maybe you could give this some thought, and I will do our best over here to see how that works out.
So, George, there are, you know, if an eviction were to occur, there are rules that require a landlord to protect the tenant's belongings for a period of time. And that period of time can be extended, but it's at least 15 days. Now, you know, 15 days might not be enough, but that's in there as a hard rule that the landlord would have to make the tenant's belongings available and protect them for 15 days. Doesn't have to leave them where they are. They can be moved within the unit or into the garage, if there's a garage, or somewhere off the property as well, but they have to be protected.
There's probably some ruling in there that says that we have when you have a, you hope that your things are going to be safe. I guess the good news is that you have a phone you can carry around with you at this point. But don't you think it would be on file at the housing office in various towns around the Bay where people can actually get rules on how to extend that 15 days?
So there probably is. I don't know that the rent board would have information on that because it's state law that governs here. The rent board doesn't really have any authority on a terminated tenancy. So the rent board wouldn't be a place to check. But if a tenant is being evicted or is agreeing to be, you know, displaced, agreeing to turn over possession to the landlord, they'll typically get the 2 weeks because it's a bargaining item. So I'll leave, but I need my items to be stored, you know, until I get my next place. If it's an eviction and the landlord goes into day 16 with the tenant's personal property, the landlord will typically be willing to hold on to that property for another week, for another 2 weeks, even a month, because the alternative is that the landlord may have to hold an auction, and that can take a couple of months because the auction has to be advertised. So the landlord will typically be willing to just give it back to the tenant, because otherwise they're going to have to hold it for the auction period anyway. And if the tenant can't get their stuff, which the landlord wants them to, then the last exit is, okay, we'll hold an auction. Whatever doesn't sell at auction, then the landlord can do whatever they want with it. And that's for items that are worth a certain amount of money. The last time I checked, it was $700. That amount may have went up now. It might be $1,000 or $1,200. If the items are worth less than that minimum amount, somewhere between $700 and $1,200, I just don't remember off the top of my head, then the landlord can dispose of them immediately. But if the items are over that threshold amount, then the landlord has to auction them off. And regardless of the amount of the value, they have to be held for 15 days anyway. But on day 16, if the items do not meet the threshold minimum value amount, then the landlord can dispose of them then. If they are over the threshold amount, which again, I apologize, I don't remember if it's 700, 1,000, or 12. It's changed. It was 700 for a long, long time. And I believe it changed now to a number that's a little bit higher, maybe $1,000.
Basic workaround.
Then they've got to do the they've got to put the items up for auction. And if the tenant is available any time before the auction occurs or even on the date of the auction, then the landlord will give those items. The tenant will have to pay for the costs of storage, which will be, you know, a per-day cost. It won't be per-day cost of the entire unit because those items aren't going to occupy the entire unit, but there will be some cost. So it might be the same cost as having it in a storage unit. It might come out to that cost. You were going to say, George?
Well, yeah, you know, it's possible that you could get ripped off, but if you have goodwill between people, that'll go a little way. But it sounds like what you're saying is that this is a dynamic situation where the rules from last year could very easily be altered or brought up to date, etc. And so you're saying you might not know the date when the rule pertaining to storage and personal effects and all that, that's given a good, strong look-see, because most of the dynamic rule book says, and et cetera. After several paragraphs, there are places where things will go up or down. Cross your fingers, you know. So it would be important to contact any kind of representation is available online. You mentioned there might not be a current, but all you got to do in a situation like that one that you describe is give a look to the current read on the rules that pertain to storage. We know of a couple where they had actually an offer to take their things for $1 or $1 a day, and if you didn't have an alternative to look up and see that $1 a day wasn't the rule, people could get lost in the details.
But you could always, it seems to me that you could negotiate with the landlord, say, look, I'll give you the unit back, but give me some storage. And get the stuff out of the unit. It's a win-win for everybody. The landlord doesn't have to deal with an auction and being tied up for months. It's really a way to go. George, I have to let you go, but thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights, and please do come back. We have just a few minutes left. Let me take a call from Michael in Belmont. Michael, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hello, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Not bad, thanks, Michael.
Hey, I have a little bit of a dilemma. I was hoping you guys could maybe give me some guidance. I currently reside in Belmont, and I was forced to move from San Mateo because the house I was living in was sold, and I'm a renter, of course. And the competition for renting properties around here is quite severe. And to secure the house that I currently moved into, I had to put down a lot of money, you know. First month's rent, last month's rent, as well as a deposit, totaling about $15,000 to just move into a place. So I took in a roommate, during the process, and his name is on a lease, my name and my wife's name is on our lease, and my roommate has only paid portion of the rent since day one, and he's currently about $9,000 in the hole. And I need to figure out a way to get him out of here legally, if there is a way. Get his name off the lease, get the lease put into my name only, so I can fill that room with somebody else. So I don't know what my alternatives or options are. So I'm kind of looking to you guys for a little bit of advice.
This is going to take a minute, and we've got about a minute and a half before we go to station ID. But, Sal, it sounds to me like this is not a case where Michael can negotiate with the landlord and the other roommate out. I think they either have to work out something with this co-tenant and the landlord at one point together, or alternatively go through a formal eviction and terminate the tenancy entirely and maybe negotiate a new tenancy with the landlord. Is my guess as a non-landlord tenant attorney, is that pretty spot on?
Yeah, it is pretty spot on there, Jeff. The problem is not it's not the landlord's problem. The landlord is going to be seeking the rent, and if it's not received, it doesn't matter which of the co-tenants isn't paying their share, because that's all co-tenant business. So the landlord would then be, if they're not getting the money, would be forced to consider an eviction because they're not getting paid. So it would be an eviction for non-payment of rent. If some of the tenants, you know, of the three here, have a good relationship with the landlord, they could either not fight the eviction, you know, tell the landlord, look, I'm not going to fight the eviction. And so then when this whole thing is over, can we come back in, you know, under a contract? Now, the issue there might be, well, how do you come back in if you don't have, you know, the rent from that third tenant? But if you have the ability to rent it out to somebody, then the landlord would just have to be assured that you're not going to rent it out to somebody that's going to then cause them to have to do an eviction again, because the eviction will be expensive. So the landlord's not going to be happy with any of the occupants, with any of the tenants, because they're forced to do an eviction now. So to then start another agreement for a new tenancy with one or two of the tenants that were in that unit, going to be a little bit risky for the landlord. So if you don't fight it, well, then maybe you can make a deal up front with the landlord. Look, we're not going to fight it, but we need to get back in here. You know, we don't even want our stuff moved. So there will be, you know, everybody will be evicted. We'll, you know, we won't fight it. But it's a little tricky, and it's going to require an attorney, most likely, who will know how to handle, because it's going to be tricky, and there's going to have to be a lot of trust.
I'm going to have to interrupt for a moment. We need to break for station ID. We'll be back in just a moment. Michael, stay on the line. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Sal, when we talked about this before, my thought was the best thing to do is to try to work out something with Michael, the landlord, and this tenant, and basically offer up some of the back rent and say, go away. We will let you slide on some or all of the back rent, get the landlord in on the and just move forward. Is that really the only option that you see?
Yeah, and let me just make sure I understood that, Jeff. You mean for Michael and his for Michael to just offer the non-paying co-tenant to leave and doesn't have to pay, and this way Michael can have that room available and rent it out? Was that what you said?
In essence, whether he lets him slide on some or all of the arrears, but also get the landlord in on it, make a new and superseding lease. But unless he gets the buy-in from that departing roommate, seems to me that the hopefully departing roommate, at least for now, has the same legal rights as Michael does. And yep. Michael is equally on the hook for the rent, just like the roommate who's not living up to his obligation.
Yeah. I don't know, Jeff, that the landlord would want to take anyone off the lease, because that's one less person then that can potentially pay rent. But you know, the way Michael would present it to the landlord is this tenant has agreed to leave, because otherwise there's no reason to talk to the landlord, other than just tell the landlord, look, we're not able to pay the rent because so-and-so's not paying it. And we're just telling you rather than surprising you by not paying the full rent or any rent. If there's going to be a discussion with the landlord, it's probably going to have to include that person is going to leave, and Michael will have to eat the money that hasn't been paid, and landlord, we want to substitute somebody else in, but we don't want them on the lease. We want them to be our tenant. Landlord probably be okay with that. And then Michael has to deal with that person as Michael's own tenant.
And as my advice, whenever you're in a situation where you have to take on a roommate, and it's not someone that you know very, very well, don't put them on the lease.
Yeah, this would have been better for Michael if that person was only Michael's tenant. However, it would have been better in that he could control how to handle it, but Michael would be paying for the eviction. And so because right now the person is on the lease and the landlord is going to be paying for the eviction, Michael doesn't have to pay for the eviction, but the landlord might not want Michael to stay either because they're paying all the money for the eviction and all the time and effort. So the landlords may not want to re-rent to Michael. So it's,
in a nutshell, sorry guys, I don't mean to interject here. This is Michael. Just really quick, a question. You said the eviction. I mean, I could certainly give the money to the landlord for the eviction if it's, semi-reasonable. But you said it was very expensive. So what kind of numbers are we talking here?
You mean for an eviction?
Tens of thousands?
For an uncontested residential eviction.
Well, if it's uncontested, it might be $3,000-$4,000 if it's uncontested.
And if it's contested?
Well, I can go into the $10,000 to $15,000. If it's contested. Okay. What city is this in?
Belmont.
Oh, Belmont. That's right. Okay. Yeah, $10,000 to $15,000 for a contested eviction in Belmont might do the trick. You'd be a witness in the case. Your testimony would help. So, the 15 could go to 20. It all depends on what the other side does. There's things that can happen, that make the litigation more expensive. So, I don't know. Does that help, Michael?
Yeah, yeah.
Is Michael in a position to go after this flaky, non-paying tenant in small claims court?
No, because that tenant owes the money to the landlord and not to Michael. If it's an agreement, like most agreements, it's all three of them owe that full amount of rent, any way they get it together, to the landlord. So it's, unless there's a separate agreement between Michael and the non-paying tenant, then there's no small claims action. It's just all three tenants owe the money to the landlord, and they're all responsible for the whole thing. So how they pay it amongst themselves is not the landlord's business. And unless they have a written agreement amongst themselves that allows them to sue each other for not paying their portion, then, you know, Michael's got no claim. Also, I don't know how the claim would get funded, Michael, if you brought him to small claims court anyway, because he doesn't have the money. So you'd get a judgment, but then you'd have to go collect it.
Well, I think that he gets money sporadically here and there. He just does not pay his bills. that's the problem.
If you can negotiate with him to leave, right? I mean, you know, you're a tenant, he's a tenant, so you're not a landlord, you're not his master tenant. It's not illegal for you to ask him to leave. You can have that conversation with him. If you can get him to leave, then that would be the best thing, as long as you believe that your landlord will allow you to bring in another tenant, which ultimately you'd be able to do. But if you have a fight over it, now that's more resources being devoted to this problem. So if he agreed to leave, you know, you can't force him out. If he changes his mind, you can't force him out. But if he agrees to leave, and you're at a point where you can trust that he's going to leave, you got to quickly start talking to the landlord to make sure you're allowed to bring in a tenant who's not going to be on your lease, but be on a separate lease with you. And then, you know, you're in charge of that tenant. You're going to be a landlord now in the form of a master tenant.
Yeah, I think that, I'm on good terms with the landlord, and I have no problem catching up with the rent that's behind at this point in time, but I wasn't going to pay anything else if he's not going to pay me. I was hoping to get the landlord kind of involved to kind of force the hand so I get paid, or so that he gets paid. and if it was an eviction that cost money, I would fund that myself, you know. As far as getting my money back, I mean, you're right. He doesn't owe the money to me. He owes the money to the landlord. And I'd also fund the small claims court against him as well. So,
if he ever paid the landlord money that you already paid, the landlord would have to refund somebody money back. And you would hope that he would just refund you instead of refunding him. You know, there might be a little gray area there, but the landlord can't keep extra rent. If in fact that non-paying co-tenant would come up with the money and give it to the landlord, the landlord would have to refund someone, either you for paying that person's rent, that's the way it would go down, or refuse the money from that person and say, look, I've already collected the rent for that month, so I can't take extra.
So, yeah.
Michael, hope that helps. I need to move on, but I do hope that was of help.
I was. Thank you so much, gentlemen. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Let me turn it to Lorenzo in San Lorenzo.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. So I'm trying to keep this short for you guys. So back during COVID, they had this thing where they put a moratorium on rent. And I spoke with somebody about it, like kind of a lawyer, and he said, yeah, you don't have to pay rent. And then they were talking about extending it, and then he said the Supreme Court said they're not going to extend it. But then I saw the president on TV say, I know the Supreme Court said it's illegal, but we're going to do it anyway, which is dictator shit, but whatever. But I just didn't pay it. So I'm like 8 months in arrears, and now the landlord's telling me I got to make up for that 8 months that I missed, or they're going to evict me. And I think he's going to let me do it over time, but do I have to pay that 8 months? Cause
what 8 months is it?
I don't have to pay it.
What period of time? Is it this year?
No, it's this year that they want the money now, but it was from, I think, 21.
Oh, from 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I've been paying what I'm supposed to pay. I just never made it up. Like, I didn't pay any back tax.
I got
back,
it.
Rent.
All right. So off the top of my head, I don't know which months don't have to be paid back. But there are a block of months for which no rent is ever going to be collected by the landlord. And
okay.
2021 might be right in there.
Okay.
I just don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was the latter half of 2021. But, like, in that situation, who do I listen to? Do I listen to the president or the court or the local magistrate?
So, the local magistrate would be, that's who I would say to listen to. But
okay.
what you need is to find an answer as to which months are not collectible. That's what you need to know. And those are just, they're not collectible. There's no legislation that's ever going to say that they are collectible. I haven't heard of any. They're just not collectible.
Right.
And you just
got to
see if those are the months that fall in there.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll look that up. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Yeah. I hope you find that information easily.
I will find
Thanks
it.
Thanks for
I'm
calling.
Good at that. I'll find it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Lorenzo, thanks for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Let me turn it to John in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, hi. I heard the previous caller, and he mentioned that I got an abandonment notice on my unit, and I had paid the rent, which I have proof, their bank and my bank, and yet they still went ahead with the abandonment unit, the abandonment. They never contacted me. They have my email and my phone number, and I only found out through other tenants when it was a month or two later. And so what can I do? I mean, the proof is there. I paid, and I emailed them a bunch of times, and they were saying, oh, we didn't get a payment. Well, that's not true. And then they said, after a while, they were saying, well, a band of thieves came in and all this other stuff. And then finally they said, oh, we have to check with our vendors. And I'm like, vendors? You're supposed to be holding this property because I paid the rent. And then finally they said, well, there may be some of your stuff in the building. It took me 2.5 weeks to get into the building. I went in. And one of the employees said, no, we threw it away. We got rid of it. And what are my options? I mean, it is kind of illegal what they did, being unpaid, and they never contacted me. And what are my options here?
Wow, Jeff, this is horrible. This is terrible.
The proof. It's all here. It's
one of the elements that need to be satisfied in order to be able to serve a notice of belief of abandonment is non-payment of rent. So rent has to not be paid for a period of time, and the person has to be out of contact for a period of time. And if you've been paying the rent, then they don't meet the elements to be able to serve a notice of belief of abandonment.
For years, I've been paying the rent.
And so it sounds like you've been locked out of the unit despite tendering rent. You know, they may not have accepted the rent, but that's not one of the elements.
No, they
the element is tendering the rent.
Yeah,
so if you've offered the rent and then they can't serve a notice of belief of abandonment. It's inconsistent with the elements that allow them to do so. So it sounds like you've been wrongfully evicted.
Yes.
You know, they changed the locks and threw away your stuff. I mean, I'm just hearing wrongful eviction. You've been, you know, right? You've been thrown out wrongfully of the unit, even after you've paid rent.
I have the proof. I paid for the whole year, and you know, this is a commercial space, though. I don't know if the laws are different.
So the laws are a little different for commercial space, but if you've paid the rent, if you paid it, you can't be, there is no belief of abandonment. It's there can't be a belief if you've paid the rent.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's something special in your commercial lease that says
no, I didn't
you
even
have to be there, but that would be unusual.
That's, you know, I didn't even have a lease because I've always paid on a yearly basis for the last 12 years. A new company 2.5 years ago bought it up, an investment company, and I have the proof from Bank of America and their bank that I pay my yearly rent. And I didn't know about the whole eviction thing, and I only found out after some tenants told me, and then they kept saying, oh, we can't find your rent money. I said, no, it's there. And now they finally said, when I got into the building, they said, no, we threw it away. And I said, no, you don't throw away valuable equipment and musical instruments. No, that's so. And I'm at my wit's end. I finally got a lawyer, but it's not working because he wants me to go to my insurance company. I said, they are the ones that should be going to their insurance company. My rates are going to be raised. And I just don't know what to do. And the statute of limitations, because this happened, the notice was put up last year in June.
Seems to me you have some legal action also in conversion for the landlord taking your property and getting rid of it, given that it's premised on an unlawful eviction. Sal, should he not contact the lawyer referral service in San Francisco?
Absolutely not. Typically, they're going to be dealing with residential, but they will have a referral for this.
But
you've still been wrongfully evicted. You've been evicted wrongfully from that unit based on these facts.
And so it sounds like
you don't know.
It sounds like you may have a civil case about the equipment they took also.
Yes.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, but the thing is, that's going to cost more money to get into the courts. And I just don't
understood.
Know.
Start by getting it. Start by getting a consultation from a lawyer who knows this area and can spend some time with you and go through your records. My recommendation, call the lawyer referral service from the Bar Association of San Francisco. Their number is 415-989-1616.
Okay, yeah.
I wish you luck. I do have to move along, but I do wish you luck.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Let me turn it to Susan in San Rafael. Welcome to your legal rights.
Hello. I have a question. I am a low-income senior, and I live in project-based Section 8 housing. So I don't know if you know anything about that. But I was living in another senior building that was a project-based Section 8, and this building is brand new, and it's much better. I got on the waiting list. I got accepted. But then I got accepted in June of last year, but then I didn't get any information from them at all until the middle of November. And then on November 27th, they sent an email and said that I had to come in and sign a lease on the 29th, and that I had to start paying rent and pay the security deposit. And that was just a 2 days' notice. And also, we weren't allowed to see the apartment before we had to sign the lease and pay before we could even see the apartment. And I told them that I didn't have the money to pay rent, because I would have to pay rent at the place that I was living, plus the rent for this place, and so that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't accept their offer. And so they said, well, the housing authority would help me with move-in costs. And they didn't say how much or what. They just said, come in, sign the lease, and you'll sign a document that the housing authority will help you. So I came in, but before I signed the lease, I said, I can't sign the lease before I, you know, I can't, I don't have this much money. And then one of their workers came out and she said, don't worry, the housing authority is going to pay your first month's rent and the security deposit. So you don't have to worry about anything. Here's the keys, move in. So I moved in and then I started paying rent in January. And then last Tuesday I got a notice in my door that I owed the full amount for December and the security deposit and for 2 days in November. And I went up to talk to the manager, and she said that she was really sorry. She didn't have anything to do with it. It was a company that they hired, and they gave the wrong information. And also, they've never given me a copy of the lease, even though I've asked about it. And also, they didn't have me sign any documentation about this, the move-in cost.
So where are you with it? Where are you with all this now?
San Rafael.
No, no. Have things resolved? Are you with everything up in the air right now?
Yes, I moved in, and I've lived here since December. December 1st, and then everything was fine, and then I just got this notice that I owe this money that they told me that the housing authority was going to pay. And when I went to talk to the manager about it, she said she was very sorry, it was miscommunication.
Okay, let me pass it to you, Sal. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but the lines are full, we're really short on time.
Sure.
Sal, where can she go for recourse?
So, just one point of clarification, who sent you the letter asking for the money, the housing authority or the property manager?
Property manager.
Okay. So the reason they're sending it to you is because ultimately you're responsible. So you took that letter to the housing authority, correct?
I have not yet. I didn't know what to do.
That's what you need to do. Take that letter to the housing authority because they're probably going to pay it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Susan, thank you for joining us. We have limited time, but we have a couple callers ready to go. Let me pass it on to Mark in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, Mark. I'm a longtime fan of the program and think you're doing a fine job.
Thank you.
So, hey, I'm dealing with a hoarder in an apartment that I own. It's 6 units. The guy's been there for 27 years. House infestation issue. Apartment above him is being traumatized by mice, so I had spent like $2,000 or $3,000 on a mediation process, and I mentioned that to this guy. I had a mouse problem before. He said, oh yeah, I've caught like 15 mice in the past couple of months. I'm like, no, now you tell me. Thanks a lot. So he's got a really crowded apartment, in complete denial about putting things out of there. And even the exterminators cannot get into areas where they needed to set traps. And so I don't want to go through the eviction process. In San Francisco, you know, it's a very convoluted process. He's been there 27 years. He's 70. Now he thinks I'm the villain and be mean to him and evict him so I can get more rent. And no, I just want to be a good landlord to all six of my tenants, have a safe and clean environment for them all.
So, Sal, what can this landlord do? It sounds like this. It sounds like Mark is stuck in the middle between between the two tenants of his.
Stop. Now, I only heard of the one tenant that's hoarding, and I believe he's 72 years old.
He's 70 years old, been there for 27 years.
And he's been there. And is there another tenant, or was it just that one?
It's a 6-unit building. He is the sole tenant in this one small studio apartment, which is cramped and barely room to walk through.
Okay.
So he's not about needing help about it. I'm trying to be very proactive today. hey, there are people that can help. They, well, I've accumulated things and it's all mine. No space, blah, blah.
All right. It sounds like you've been in the unit and you've seen it. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. If you've been into the unit and you've seen it, if in your opinion it looks like that might be a fire trap in there, you know, you can have a property inspection, bring in an expert, you know, either a contractor or someone from the fire department, and have them tell you what you need to do. And then you pass that along either with a letter or an eviction notice to the tenant to get that done. But because you are in a situation now where you have to look into whether that is a fire hazard, you've got to follow through. If a fire happens and you didn't do anything, you're going to be, you know, you could be held criminally liable. So you have to look into this now, and the way you do it is you set up a property inspection with the permission of the tenant, you go in with your fire expert, and then you do whatever the fire expert says. And by you do it means you tell the tenant this has to be done. You can do it with a letter, or you can do it with an eviction notice. But it's got to happen. That's the main problem with hoarding, is the fire hazard. There's also, you know, rodents and other pests. But the main issue is fire. So, does that help?
Would I have to get his permission for that?
You have to get his permission to go into the unit. It's not an emergency right now, you know, because you don't know if it's a fire hazard, but it sure sounds like one.
Can he get around?
Always has an aspect.
Can Mark get around the permission angle by giving notice under his lease?
If he doesn't give you permission, under state law, you can just give a notice that says we're coming in on this day. The tenant still has to, you know...
they have a right to be there, or at least... Yeah, they have a right to adequate notice and then the chance to be there, I would think, right?
Correct. And if the tenant is not there, you can go in then. With your own key, you can go in. Because you've right. given adequate notice for the two things that Jeff just mentioned. You know, the right to be there if they want to. And, you know, picking a date that's convenient for them. But if it doesn't work informally, then you serve him with a notice of entry. And if the tenant doesn't allow you in, then that becomes a basis for an eviction. So then you have two bases. One, not letting me in, and, well, I guess you don't have the other one until your expert goes in and tells you whether or not it's a fire hazard.
And from what I understand, the onus is on landlord for helping alleviate the situation.
It is. It is on the landlord. Because you know about this now, you have to follow up.
Right.
You know,
right.
Even your property insurance will have a provision in there that requires you to follow up.
Gentlemen, I have to cut us off. Unfortunately, we're out of time. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco Bay Area, where we focused on landlord-tenant law. My guest tonight was landlord-tenant attorney extraordinaire, Salvatore Timpano of San Francisco, and our final guest has been all of you. Our show tonight's been produced by yours truly. You have a line on a new job, but the employer who just laid you off says you can't work there. You signed an agreement they made you sign when you started your job. What is the status of so-called non-compete agreements in California and beyond? As always, we'll take your calls and answer your questions. That's Your Legal Rights next week, Wednesday at 6 o'clock p.m. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Sal Timpano, and all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Have a good night and zealously protect your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.